5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, we are back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we are inside the Quicken Loans Studios and the NBA Conference Finals. Hey, they continue on, and in our next segment, we're going to take a look back and celebrate and also examine the legendary career of number 23. That, of course, is Michael Jordan, world-class athlete, in my opinion, the best of the best. Just to recap, six-time NBA champ, five-time MVP, and, of course, a Basketball Hall of Famer. So we have invited on well-known basketball journalist Roland Lazen, who has just released an in-depth book about MJ that is, I will say, absolutely captivating and the ultimate book on Michael. It is a must-read, a definitive biography. It's so good to have you with us, Roland, on this Friday night. How are you?
I'm doing great, Elissa. You doing well?
I'm doing fantastic. Friday nights, we always have a lot of fun, and we want to welcome you into YSR. So congratulations on the book. When I got it in the mail, I couldn't believe it. 677 pages. I thought you provided a complete portrait of MJ, and not just about his success and the fame and the glory on the court, but a good portion of the book provides insight and things I didn't know in terms of his family history. We're going to get into that in just a minute, but I want you to first set the stage for our national audience, talking a little bit about your background, your relationship with Michael Jordan, because you spent 30 years covering MJ in college and the NBA.
Right. I covered him his sophomore year in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And then I went from there to writing about pro basketball. And I actually picked him up in the late 80s. I was covering the Detroit Pistons. So I got to cover all of the showdowns between Jordan and the Pistons, and those were dynamic events. And then I went and began covering the Bulls. And the Chicago Tribune hired me to do the Bulls' 1993 championship booklet. And so from there, I began doing all these different Bulls-related projects, culminating in 1998 in a book I did on the breakup of the Bulls called Blood on the Horn.
Mm-hmm. Roland Lazenby is with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And so as I've gone through your book, you had access to many of Michael's coaches, his friends, his teammates, family members. And as you were just talking about, you've already spent so much time covering him. What were your expectations with this particular book? Because when you pulled back the curtain on him, were there some surprises and some aspects about Michael Jordan that you didn't know?
Many things. And, you know, I really began with the idea that Michael was such an impressive guy in so many ways. I was always asking myself, where did this cat come from? And I began to wonder, someone like Michael Jordan doesn't just happen. He's the product of generations. He was a very fierce guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who were his people and what were they doing during Jim Crow when things were absolutely impossible for African Americans, particularly in North Carolina, a state that had more Klan members than all the other southern states combined.
And you talked about what the four generations of North Carolina ancestors before him, the moonshiners, the hard workers, and you really explored those intimate details about Michael Jordan's childhood.
Right. Well, and the connections are funny in different ways. His great-grandfather, Dawson Jordan, stood 5'5", and was a very muscular man.
Really?
Yes, and he lived until Michael was 14, and he ruled the Jordan family. But he was the original tongue, that tongue of concentration that James Jordan, Michael's father, picked up, that Michael picked up and became so famous for, it was Dawson Jordan, this fierce little man. He was crippled, probably from polio, living along the river, but he was just a very fierce guy. He was a logger, and he was rafting logs down the river to Wilmington, and he was a moonshiner of repute.
Roland Lazenby with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, best-selling author that has just released the new book about Michael Jordan. It is titled Michael Jordan, The Life. And I think curiosity on my part, when you talk about MJ, this world-class athlete, I've always wondered, you know, what motivated him, that driven, that competitive spirit, and that insatiable appetite for success. I mean, he had that alpha male and has that alpha male personality, but help us fully understand MJ and where that all comes from.
Well, you know, a lot of it, according to family members and some other observations, a lot of it began when Michael was a little guy, 7, 8, 9 years old. His brother Larry was 11 months older. Larry was much like his father, very mechanically inclined. Michael was not. But his father, James Jordan, was greatly irritated by this, and there was a sizable amount of fatherly disapproval. In fact, James Jordan challenged young Michael's masculinity over the issue. And obviously, this is one of the things that has been a linchpin of the Jordan legacy. He challenged his father in return, and that time sort of hardwired him for all the sort of fierce competitiveness, this take-no-prisoners approach he's always had.
You know, and Roland, I'm glad you bring that up, because I want to hear some more about the dynamic with the father-son relationship with MJ and his dad, because as you were saying, that he was disapproving of him as a young man. Why was that? Why was he so demanding?
Well, you know, James Jordan had also faced a disapproving father. It led him to be very close to his grandfather, Dawson Jordan, and that's even where James Jordan picked up the tongue that Michael ended up making famous.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, sometimes those things run in strains in families. And James Jordan was a man of achievement in his own right. Coming out of the 1950s in North Carolina, he was a mechanic. He knew how to fix a tractor from age 10. He went into the Air Force and served, and then later got training to work at the GE plant. He went to New York to get the training. And so he was a person of accomplished technical skills and someone who was part of a new generation of African Americans in the South hoping for better treatment, better days.
Roland Lazenby is with us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and of course has just released the new book, Michael Jordan, The Life. Roland, we do want to pause and encourage all the listeners to go out and get a copy of their book. Where can they go and do that?
Well, you know, the book supposedly is everywhere.
Indeed it is.
By that, I mean it's obviously at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, various chains. It's available online and also in bookstores. And please always remember those independent bookstores. They are so important to our country.
Okay, so Roland, when we talk about Michael's relationship with his father, I thought it was interesting, too, in the book that you said each accomplishment, for talking about Michael Jordan, he achieved was a battle cry for defeating his father's negative opinions of him. Can you expound on that?
Yes, you know, very early in the game, Michael went on to become a very good Little League player. He later had a failure in Babe Ruth League ball, but he became this very good high school player his junior year. And it was obvious to those around him that James Jordan had a lot of affection for his son, and perhaps Michael understood that. But on another level, the one that mattered the most, he really didn't have a sense of that. And plus, James Jordan was so angry because Michael refused to work. He worked exactly 1 week in his entire adolescence. He worked cleaning the pool at a local hotel.
Uh-huh.
The thing that amazes me, Michael worked just 1 week, and yet the pay stub from that 1 week of work is in the Cape Fear Museum on the
wow.
North Carolina coast.
Wow. You know, I have to mention, too, it was his actually Michael's big brother, Larry, who was the one that was infatuated with basketball. He was the one that really did want to work at it, correct?
He did. And yet, and he was much stronger than Michael. Michael was taller and reed thin. They sort of looked like twins, except for those differences. And they battled furiously every day, every day. And these were titanic battles. They were perhaps brotherly wars, but there was more emphasis on war than there was brotherly. It was really very tough. George Mumford, the Bulls team psychologist, said that those wars were sort of how Jordan viewed every team relationship from that point on. He would go onto rosters at the University of North Carolina with the Bulls, and he was always looking to smash his teammates in one-on-one. James Worthy, who was a junior at North Carolina when Michael came there as a freshman, said, "Michael was a bully, and he bullied me."
And I definitely want to get into that. We got to step aside for a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with much more. Roland Lazenby, best-selling author that has just released the new book, Michael Jordan, The Life. We definitely want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of that. And we will be right back with much more with Roland Lazenby at YSR, The Big E Sports Show. Stay close. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, The Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. As we cruise through the fastest 2 hours in radio, we love hearing from you. And some of you have already chimed in. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, as we have a compelling conversation with Roland Lazenby, a best-selling author that has just released the new book, Michael Jordan, The Life. And, of course, we are talking about in regards to his family growing up. But also, I thought it was interesting before break, Roland, you and I were talking about off-air, that Michael, when he was 12 years old, he was the state MVP, throwing 2 no-hitters and led them to a state championship. He really was a good little baseball player, wasn't he?
He was a great Little League player.
Uh-huh.
He led his North Carolina team to within an eyelash of the Little League World Series. But then the next year he went to Babe Ruth League ball. And, of course, baseball was the game his disapproving father loved. And Michael was drafted by a Babe Ruth League team with great expectations, and he hardly played at all. In fact, in 3 years of Babe Ruth League ball, he never even made the local all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very painful thing. Youth sports can be like that. You can be the king one moment and then struggle to get in the game for the next year and then to have a hard time shining the next 2 years.
Talk to us about tonight, Michael Jordan losing his father in 1993, and how that influenced him in terms of his retirement decision and to step away from the game that he loved, and that was basketball.
Well, you know, Michael's such a superstar on the court. People never really stopped, fans in Chicago and elsewhere, never really stopped to consider the fact that he was human. And, you know, I have to be honest, as a media member, I often just sort of let the thought escape me. But then I had a friend whose son was murdered in 2010, and I watched the brutal difficulty for families of homicide victims. And it all became clear to me when Michael's father, and he was so close to his father, when he was murdered, it literally shattered Michael Jordan's world in 1993.
Right. Hey, basketball journalist Roland Lazenby has spent almost 30 years covering MJ in college and, of course, the NBA, and he had intimate access to so many of Michael Jordan's coaches, his friends, his teammates, and family members. And certainly, I am just wondering, I want you to share with all of us tonight the influence of his mother. I mean, she definitely a very dynamic personality of the family. And all I have to say is, after I read your book, she's a very strong, a very resilient woman. She went through a lot.
Right, much more than we ever imagined.
That's
from the
right.
outside. But her father, no one made it in sharecropping. And her father, I was looking for who was this fierce figure in the Jordan background.
Mm-hmm.
Her father made it in sharecropping. He came to own his own land. He was also a moonshiner, but he grew an array of crops. He had a much bigger house than all the other farmers, but he was a very tough, sort of unforgiving man. But he was focused on economic success, and that was Dolores Jordan. She had tremendous drive. She had huge disappointment young in her life. She was unwed and pregnant at 15, but she was the person who secured Michael Jordan's Nike contract. Sonny Vaccaro, the Nike maven who did so many things for basketball. Sonny said, Dolores Jordan is truly one of the single most impressive people I've met in my life.
Yes, because Michael, he liked Adidas, correct?
Oh, he did. And he was 22. He had no thought whatsoever about a shoe deal. And shoe deals were nothing then. But he got a shoe deal before he played an NBA game that eclipsed all other shoe deals many times over, paid him a 25% royalty, and Nike hadn't even realized by virtue of that shoe deal they had made him a partner, and they would eventually have to recognize that he was a partner in the firm.
Dolores and James Jordan certainly were both very devoted parents, but I thought you also provided a bit of a startling new context for Jordan's life. I think many times there was some inner conflicts within the family, and you kind of clarified some of the narratives that this was not the perfect American family. There were some struggles.
By no means was it. Their older daughter had made allegations of sexual abuse against James Jordan in 1975. Those allegations wouldn't come to light, and even then, not to a very bright light. She published a book privately in 2001 about it. But there was tremendous conflict as the years went on, and as Michael Jordan gained this worldwide success, his parents were almost in a tug of war over him and over the money and over the running of various aspects of the business. And most people don't realize, and I did not realize, that Michael Jordan was winning his championships in basketball while dealing with tremendous, tremendous personal difficulty in his family.
Well, it is a complete portrait of Michael Jordan, his life, his career, stretching from his youth, and there's so many wonderful things in here that you share. Michael Jordan, the life, and Roland, we sincerely appreciate you dropping by at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Where can our fans connect with you on Twitter, too?
It's at Lazenby, L-A-Z-E-N-B as in boy, Y, on Twitter.
Well, we always will have an open invitation for you because it's hard to fit into two segments, a book that's almost 700 pages long, and there's some great stuff in there. Thank you again, Roland.
Thank you, Alyssa.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR at the Big E Sports Show. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And it's been a while since we have focused our conversation on Big Ten football, specifically the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And so each and every week, former NFL and Husker standout, the great Jason Peter, joins us. How are you this weekend, Jason? You ready for a three-day weekend?
I am. Unfortunately, it looks like rain all weekend up here in Lincoln, but excited. I know kids are done with school, so summer's here.
Well, summer is here, and for, you know, most of folks in this business, you know, summer can kind of wind things down, but my season's just kicking up because when kids are out of school, it's double duty for me as a mom. It's crazy.
Yep. I don't envy you women.
I know. We always are multitasking. So let's do a quick recap. We were talking about the NFL draft last week, Jason, on the show. But what's going on? Former Nebraska quarterback Taylor Martinez, his contract was voided with the Philadelphia Eagles. He failed his physical.
Yeah, it's the same foot injury that he had for his entire senior year. I think, you know, he ultimately maybe had three or four starts, but it was something that he first tried to play with in the beginning of the season to no success, and ultimately he was just shelved for the rest of the year. And I think a lot of people were thinking, well, you know, probably a little bit of hanging it up for the year has to do with maybe making sure he's ready for, you know, the combine. And ultimately, he doesn't get drafted, but the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly take a chance on him and sign him to a free agent deal. And he got to Philly. He had to take the physical like all players do, and they failed him. So it looks like he is going to be heading for the surgical table and see if he can get that fixed. And I don't know what happens after that.
Well, he certainly had an incredible career at the University of Nebraska. You start looking over the four seasons there with the Huskers. He started 43 games. But I understand, though, Jason, at his pro day, that he really did display exceptional athleticism. So I guess I was a bit surprised to see that his free agent contract, that it was voided with Philadelphia.
Yeah, it just comes down. I mean, you know, if for a guy like Taylor, you know, he's not your prototypical quarterback. So he's an athlete. He's going to be changing positions, you know, unless he thinks he's going to play quarterback, which I doubt. There was another Nebraska quarterback once upon a time who wanted to play quarterback in the NFL, and they didn't really want him to. It's Eric Crouch, and ultimately he wasn't playing football anymore. But, you know, with Taylor, he seems open to changing positions, whatever a team needs. He, you know, you mentioned athletic. He can run. He can run north and south. He's not the most elusive guy, you know, going east and west, and he's not going to shake any guys. He's not going to, you know, probably have any of those highlight plays where the defender is just kind of stuck, you know, looking at him. He can run north and south, though. Now, can he catch the ball? I don't know. You know, he first came to Nebraska as an athlete. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It will obviously, you know, whether it's Philly or another team that will extend an opportunity for him, that remains to be seen.
You seem cautious listening to you talk about Taylor Martinez. Are you a fan of his?
You know, I never really was, just because, I mean, let me take that. In the beginning, I thought he was good for the program, or not for the program, for the football team, because they didn't really have much is his freshman year. Bo Pelini kind of didn't do him any favors, though, with the type of offense that they were trying to run. You know, they were asking him to throw this football all over the place, and he's just not that type of quarterback. You know, for him, he's got to be in shotgun. You got to be able to let him see what's out there, and you got to give him more opportunities to run the ball. And now maybe those opportunities were there, and he just decided to you know, not take them. But, you know, it's not just, I guess, what happened on the field. It's just kind of the mentality. You know, we'd always hear, you know, stuff that comes out of his mouth, whether it was, you know, a few years ago after playing Georgia in the bowl game. You know, he's next year it's all or bust. And, you know, he kept putting Nebraska, he'd go public talking about how, you know, they deserve to be recognized as one of the best teams in the country. And you know, it's just stuff like that. It's all talk, you know. Anybody can talk, but, you know, can you walk the walk? And I guess that's the part that always bothered me. And, you know, it's just not thing, I guess, that I'm used to, but I know it's a different age now, different era, and I guess these kids, they pretty much can say whatever they want.
Okay, Jason Peter is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Each and every week, he joins us on Friday nights with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, so he's breaking it all down, talking about Taylor Martinez. Also, some big Nebraska Husker news this week. Talk to us about, gosh, last week we were talking about Jameis Winston. What in the world's going on stealing bicycles on campus? Tell us about this, one of the linebackers there.
Oh, yeah, Josh Banderas.
What is he thinking?
Yeah, I know. That's pretty much what everybody around here is saying. Who knows?
See, we need to pay athletes, right?
What's that?
We need to start paying athletes, student athletes.
Right? Is this another sign that these kids need more money? But, you know, I know the father, he played at Nebraska as well. Father plays in my charity golf tournament each year. And, you know, people kept saying, well, what's Bo going to do? What's Bo going to do for punishment? And I'm thinking to myself and saying, Bo doesn't have to really do anything because I know the father. And the father is going to be worse than any punishment that Pelini could hand out. But no, obviously there's got to be some sort of consequence. Just stupid. You know, it's basically what it is. Just another dumb kid, who thinks they've got this brilliant idea and, ultimately it backfires. You know, at least when the cop pulled him over, they fessed pretty quickly, but I don't know how you can argue that, you know, when you got 15 bikes in the back of the pickup truck. But yeah, we'll see what happens in terms of a suspension. Who knows how long. Bo's always trying to make examples of guys. This one, you know, you got a hometown boy. It'll be interesting to see what Bo does.
Okay, Jason Peter has been with us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Jason, next week, let's definitely get into the news coming out this week of the NFL. Retired players filing lawsuits and claiming the NFL illegally supplied them with painkillers to conceal injuries. I am very, very interested in hearing what you have to say about that. Okay, enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And as always, join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back on this Friday night, the fastest 2 hours in radio at YSR. I'm Elissa Walker Campbell. And before we get underway with our final segment, time has flown by. We would love for you to connect with us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. We love hearing from each and every one of you. And right now, we're going to talk some MLB. We are going to sound off on a number of teams and find out what teams are rising and what teams are falling. And providing the scout's take is our very own go-to guy. That's our point man, and that is Andy Pondillo at Yahoo Sports Radio. Good evening, Andy. It's good to have you along with us.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Elissa. And before we even get started, one statement I got to make. You talk about teams rising, teams falling.
Mm-hmm.
1-4 through the baseball season, absolutely anything can happen from this point. So even the teams that are in the cellar right now could be potential playoff teams. That's the great thing about the baseball season.
That's right. And a lot of baseball still ahead, because we want you to provide that six-week analysis of how things have played out. Let's talk about the team in our backyard, and that, of course, is the Houston Astros. I am a very optimistic person. You know that, spending time around me. Let's set aside the win, the loss record. Where has the team excelled, Andy?
Team has been amazing in the starting pitching category. A top five team in the American League in starting pitching. You would have never expected that coming into the season. Scott Feldman as the ace doesn't exactly scream ace to a lot of people, but young guys have stepped up. Jared Cozart, Colin McHugh comes out of nowhere to be absolutely lights out, and Dallas Keuchel starting to get some national attention. He pitched a complete game shutout and then came within an out of pitching two consecutive complete game shutouts, a feat that a lot of pitchers have never even come close to. So the Astros pitching has been extremely good. The hitting has definitely been lacking. It's one of the worst offenses the Astros have seen in some time. Starting to turn it around, the call-up of George Springer has really united the offense and started to make them a little bit more competitive. But with all that being said, the bullpen has been atrocious. And no matter how good that the starting pitching has been, no matter how much the offense has turned around here in the last couple of weeks, that bullpen has kind of hindered them from putting together any long winning streaks.
Well, and you identified talking about the bullpen, and why are the club's relievers, why are they struggling so mightily?
Well, what you have here is you have some injuries. Jesse Crane and Matt Albers, two guys the Astros went out and signed for this season. Jesse Crane was auditioning to be the closer, hasn't thrown one pitch yet this season. Matt Albers has been on the disabled list. So you knock out two guys to an already young bullpen. You take out the two veteran guys, just leaving Chad Qualls kind of his lone ranger. You've seen young guys come in and out. Nobody has set roles, and I think for a relief pitcher, it's a lot easier to go out there to know if you're a seventh inning guy, the eighth inning guy, and it's just been a kind of a mess out there. They've gotten, even with how bad they've been, they've gotten a little bit better. You have seen improvement through the Astros season thus far, and you know that's what the season's all about, is improvement, not losing 100 games, getting some more young guys up and trying to find success at the major league level. A couple weeks ago, it looked like they were almost at complete loss level. People were calling for the manager's head, getting kind of ugly in Houston. In the current day, it's gotten better. You just got to hope that they don't revert back to what they were doing earlier in the season. And I think it's going to get better. When you have good starting pitching, the laws of averages in baseball start to turn in your favor.
Hey, we're breaking it all down at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, with our very own Andy Pondillo. He loves going around the horn, talking some baseball. And Andy, you're absolutely right. That absolutely has to be a point of emphasis, because when you talk about the bullpen, I mean, they're the worst in baseball. And how many home runs have they allowed this year?
By far the worst in baseball. baseball, and I couldn't even tell you how many home runs they've allowed this year.
Last I saw was 18.
I can tell you, however, that their ERA was hovering around 6 for a good long while. Now, I think they've gotten that under that marker, thankfully, with the signing of Tony Sipp coming in and doing a great job at the late innings for the Astros. You've seen them start to improve, but it's still just it's a bad bullpen. It's hard to win like that in Major League Baseball.
What is your assessment of their farm system and how they are developing talent?
I sometimes am concerned what I see because I see young players coming up that are highly touted, such as a George Springer. He came to the major leagues as the guy, you know, comparisons to maybe a Ryan Braun or to a lesser extent Hunter Pence, who is Astro now at the Giants. So he comes up, he's supposed to be the savior of the organization, and when he gets here, he just seems kind of clueless at first. Now, granted, he's turned it around some. He's still making some dumb rookie mistakes out there, but at 24 years old, that's kind of a long time to keep a big prospect like George Springer in the minor leagues, so he's very seasoned, and the whole dynamic to keeping him down the minors a long time was so he comes up and feels like a complete product right when he gets to the majors. And so far, while he's done good, he's united the offense, he's been an excellent run producer, he's had several errors out in the outfield, he's made base running blunders, and it's far from a complete product. So you have to wonder what's going on down there in the minor leagues. Why is someone of this nature not coming up without those types of errors right off the bat? And you hope that he's able to iron those out at the major league level. They need to struggle at the major league level, but they also don't need to be making fundamental mistakes like that.
We are so glad you're along with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. Andy, I know you've got some great followers. Tell all of them where they can go and check out your podcast.
My podcast, ClimbingTowelsHill.com. So if you're an Astros guy in Houston wanting to hear some more news, notes, rumors about the team, we're always putting stuff up over there, whether it's articles and then my podcast, Blasting Off. We do that once a week.
Okay, so Andy, you were hitting on, talking about George Springer. I mean, this is a guy that has come in and provided instant offense. I mean, he's really infused life. He's been impressive. But how important is it for him to continue to have that singular focus and that he doesn't start reading all the press clippings and all the hype because there are big expectations from him now?
It's going to be tough because there's no one around him to really take the attention away from him. And there's other guys in the minor leagues. You know, when they call up John Singleton, he's going to get just as much attention. Domingo Santana, Mark Appel, there's huge names in the minor leagues right now ready to come up for the Astros at some point, but they're not here yet. So Springer's the only guy. And it is tough for a young guy to come into this situation because a lot of times you see a good young player like a Mike Trout come to the Angels, but he has other guys there. He has Albert Pujols. He has Josh Hamilton now. He has Howie Kendrick, who's been there for many years. C.J. Wilson, who they signed. Jared Weaver. There's other guys to deflect attention. So when the Astros lose, I'm not going to say the Houston media is very hard on their players, especially where the team's at right now. But, you know, you still kind of feel the brunt of it. So I think it's kind of hard on George, and you just got to hope that John Singleton will be up sooner than later to kind of give him not only some protection in the batting order, but protection in the clubhouse.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Andy Pondillo at Yahoo Sports Radio. So let's move ahead here in the American League. Let's talk about the Oakland A's and how are things playing out for them in terms of their season, and can they possibly keep up this pace that they're at?
This pace is almost unreasonable to see the Oakland Athletics playing at, but when you look at their starting rotation and what they've done, you would say maybe it is reasonable. And everything they sign, Moneyball, we've seen movies on it, we've talked about it a lot. Everything Billy Bean seems to touch for Oakland turns to gold. And you got the young Sonny Gray, a Cy Young candidate this year. Scott Kazmir, just a couple years ago, pitching down the street from here for the Sugarland Skeeters, out of Major League Baseball completely.
Wow.
Finds himself now with Oakland, 5-1, 2.39 ERA. Just beautiful stuff. Jesse Chavez even coming through. They had injuries to their pitching staff. They weren't supposed to be this good this season. And then you just go to the offense where you keep saying, you know, these guys, they put up big numbers each year, but there's no way they can keep doing it year to year. Josh Donaldson, a major run producer. Brandon Moss, over 40 RBI. Jonas Cespedes, the big Cuban defector who's done great things for Oakland. You know, he doesn't even have to be the guy like they thought he was going to be because he keep getting contributions up and down the entire lineup. And the amazing thing about Oakland is they have the best pitching staff right now in terms of runs allowed, and then they have the best offense in terms of runs scored. So their run differential is close to 100 runs ahead this early in the season. it's amazing. I think they're going to run away with this division. But you always look at a team that lacks that veteran leadership. And maybe you can call them veterans now because they've been to the playoffs a few times. But none of those real big names in that lineup, you always wonder, can they get through three rounds of the playoffs? Because it's quite difficult once you run up against those big teams.
You know, Andy, you and I were talking earlier, and I have to wonder, I mean, we know how good the A's are, but can a low-budget team, can they win the World Series?
It's happened before. The Florida Marlins have done it. I guess 97, you wouldn't call them a low-budget team. 2003, you would. So they were able to do it in 2003. But I'm under the belief, you watch the Tampa Bay Rays, you watch the Oakland Athletics, good teams year after year, not able to win the World Series. I'd say you don't have to be a high-budget team, but you have to be above what they're spending. If Oakland's able to make a move this season, go out, and I think as good as their starting rotation has been, I would like to add another veteran arm to that starting rotation for the stretch run, a guy that's been there, done it, knows what it takes to win a World Series. I don't know who will be available. We don't really know that until July to see what teams are really in, which teams are really out. So I think they need to add another arm to that rotation for a playoff run. I know that's not really their style of play to make that big deadline move. I think they have to. I don't believe you can be the Tampa Bay Rays and win a World Series. It's just too difficult. You can get there, but every single round of the playoffs has its new challenges. You're going to need veterans that have done it before to get through all three rounds.
You're going to need veterans, and you're going to need depth. So let's quickly, can you give us a quick hit on the Texas Rangers? I mean, they've been so banged up. Is there any point of return?
Texas Rangers, the surprising thing, their home run count, I don't have the stat up in front of me, but I believe they're third or fourth to last in the league in home runs, and you would have never guessed that in that ballpark they play in, adding Prince Fielder. It's a lineup that should have been stacked. The lineup isn't contributing, and I think they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves because of their loss of pitching, trying to make up for losing Martin Perez and all the other guys that have been hurt in that rotation. They've had, I believe, nine different starters to this point, and that's just not a good recipe for winning. It's really no fault of the Rangers, but I wonder about their pitching. They would almost be forced to make a move like Oakland to get another starter, and even if they get another starter, they're still, to me, only half as good as Oakland. And you know, the Angels have proved to be pretty good this year, so I think that they're going to be up against it this whole season. They might be able to finish 500, but that's just not going to be good enough. To make matters a lot worse, an injury to Prince Fielder, news just coming out that he has a herniated disc in his back, going to require surgery, most likely out for the season. So a bad situation just keeps getting worse for the Texas Rangers.
And that, of course, was our very own Andy Pondillo at Yahoo Sports Radio. And we want to pause on this Memorial Day weekend and thank all of our guests in our lineup. Brian Jones from CBS Sports, Roland Lazenby, Brian Cuban, the executive director of the Mark Cuban Foundation, the Fallen Patriot Fund, Tom Pippins, Fox 6 Television Sports Director, and Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Encouraging you to not drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter @eRadioSports, and we will see you.